And now out to the Fox Theater live for the 10th anniversary Two Jewish Show.
And in fact, it was true. I was apparently committed to producing a one-hour show every week from then until, well, tonight. It was clear from the start that this radio show was going to explore anything and everything of interest and importance in the Jewish world. And we would interview anyone and everyone worth talking to. We wanted to see what it means to be a Jew in America and around the world, and what in particular it's like to be in this uniquely great place, to be both free and successful and Jewish. What are the rewards, the challenges? On our radio show, we were going to explore what it means to be fully Jewish and fully American, and to do so with intelligence and style and, well, attitude, or what is perhaps more properly termed chutzpah. Can you all say that after me now, please? Well, some of you can, I see. Chutzpah is a Yiddish word that means nerve. The classic definition is the guy who kills his mother and father and throws himself on the mercy of the court because now he's an orphan. Chutzpah is an essential Jewish quality that's helped us survive for thousands of years in lots of hostile environments. Now that we've been living for generations here in America, the challenge is different. How do we reinvigorate an ancient tradition in a country that only cares about what's new today or tomorrow? There's a couple of answers. First, we draw on our amazing, diverse religion and culture. And second, we show enough native chutzpah to take pride in who we are. I know we have enough chutzpah. Lord knows, we Jews have enough opinions. You know the old joke, you have two Jews, you have three opinions, you have four synagogues. That's the heart of who we are as a people. If we care about something, we argue about it, for better or worse. And that makes for great radio. But you know, we had a big problem right from the start with this show. What were we going to call it? I mean, every great work of art needs a title. So we threw out a lot of possible names. All Jews Considered. Some votes. Fresh Jewish Air did not get any support at all. One recommendation was that we should call the show Chopped Liver. Well, that's so if somebody criticized us, and if Jews are listening, somebody is criticizing us, we could say, what are we, Chopped Liver? Yes. My personal favorite, of course, was Deli Home Companion. But the lawyers told us we'd get sued. And we do try to listen to our lawyers since they're all Jewish, of course. For a while, we called this Not Yet on the Air show Shema Yisrael, Hear O Israel. I mean, it was Jewish and very central to how we Jews think about things. The passage is from Deuteronomy 6. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. One God, indivisible for liberal and conservative Jews and all. So that was the name of the show for a while. But every time we told somebody we were going to call our new radio show Shema Yisrael, they said exactly the same thing. That's okay, but it's too Jewish. Or they said, Shema Yisrael, oh, that's a good name, but it's in Hebrew and religious and frankly, too Jewish. And after 5 or 6 dozen of these comments, we got the idea that not only was the show title too Jewish, but the show title ultimately had to be too Jewish. And so Too Jewish was born 10 long years ago. You know, it's like when you're delighted to learn that your daughter is going to marry a Jewish guy, and then he turns out to be a rabbi. I wanted a Jewish son-in-law, you say, but this one is just too Jewish. Now, I'm often asked, sometimes by guests like Elie Wiesel or Neil Sedaka or Robert Klein, how can you be too Jewish? I mean, that's impossible. And of course, as a rabbi and cantor, I agree. But there remains a subtle bias within our own wonderful American Jewish community that something actually can be too Jewish. It's not that we aren't proud of being Jewish. It's just that we're not always sure what that means. And one of the central occupations of Too Jewish over these years has been trying to help all of us figure it out. It used to be easier. You were born Jewish, you stayed that way, and if you happened to forget it, lots of other folks would remind you of that fact, both Jews and especially non-Jews. But you know, America is a free and open place, and we Jews have assimilated to the point where we often think of ourselves as many things before we think of ourselves as Jews. We are Americans, we are Arizonans, we are Tucsonans, we are Republicans or Democrats, we are Wildcat basketball fans. There's usually a bigger minion at McHale Center than in the synagogue. And by the way, along the way, we are Jews. The truth is today, not that it's wrong to be too Jewish, it's that the challenge is to be Jewish enough so somebody might think you actually are too Jewish. In a land where people eat bacon on their bagels, where Eric Cantor is the House Majority Leader and President Obama holds a Passover Seder each year, is not Jewish. The weird idea that you can be fully Jewish and fully American is still in play. So tonight, as we have done every single week for 10 full years, we are both exploring and celebrating what it means to be Jewish in America. And we promise to solve it all for you in the next 85 minutes. Thanks for being here. We have a great show planned for tonight. At least I certainly hope it's a great show. Now, it might seem that I'm trying to please everybody here, but actually, since my mom is here in the theater, I figure if I can manage to please my Jewish mother, we'll probably be okay. She's both a great fan and, beyond question, my toughest critic. You know the classic Jewish joke. A Jewish mother gives her son two ties, a red tie and a blue tie. The son puts on the red tie, he comes down to dinner, the mother looks at him and says, "No, what's wrong with the blue tie?" I certainly hope to please and inspire everybody who's here tonight, and in any case, but I figure if my mom likes the show tonight, we're doing fine. And now, to get us properly started, we welcome our first guest tonight, the former president of my synagogue, Temple Emmanuel, and, by the way, the mayor of Tucson, Jonathan Rothschild.
Rothschild's aim is to serve our customers. Cordial service is Rothschild's aim. We work hard to deserve our customers, proud of carrying the Rothschild name.
I'm going to get you a microphone, Jonathan, because although I know you can project many things, your voice probably not so much. Little technical challenge, which we will supersede. All right.
Ooh.
There we go. Thank you. All right. We're delighted to have you here tonight. Now you've got two mics. That's like the dream for a mayor, isn't it?
It's great.
Jonathan, as you know, it's customary for the city of Tucson to present organizations like the wonderful organizations we're benefiting here tonight, Jewish Family and Children's Services, Tucson Hebrew Academy, Temple Emmanuel, with a copper letter when they've accomplished something great. But you know, we sort of felt like it was very important that Too Jewish turned that around a little bit, and so we would like to present the city of Tucson with a copper letter. This was made by Margie Kendall, and it is actually a shin, a Hebrew letter. So here you go.
Thank you, Rabbi. I will assure that this finds a place of prominence in the mayor's office. You know, we have a mezuzah as we come in the door, just so people know.
There you go. You know, you couldn't pass anyway, so I'm delighted. Thank you, and mazel tov. So I'm going to ask another favor. The holiday of Passover is coming up. And by the way, we'll check your office to make sure it's still there, dusted, appropriately shined.
It will be good.
Good, good, good. So Pesach is about eating matzah, the great bread of affliction. And as you know, after Passover is over, there are boxes and boxes of matzah left. Because, you know, you buy the 5-pound box, and after you have about 2-3 pieces, it's enough. So If you would, Mr. Mayor, we would like to ask that you read our list of top 10 uses for matzah after Passover is over.
Well, Rabbi, I'd be happy to do that, but it's reminding me of the days when we worked together very carefully, and you would write my stuff, and I didn't like it, and I just have to write it over.
Yes, every bloody time. I mean, yes, I remember that. So
there might be a couple different, but here are the top 10 uses for matzah after Passover's over. The first, we used to have spring training, so it's bases for spring training baseball. Now it is bases for City League softball. A great thing. Number 9, to play matzah frisbee with your dog Shlomo. Number 8, to plug holes in your plumbing. It works on people, why not? Number 7, and very appropriate for Tucson, break up and use as confetti for the rodeo parade. Let's give it a little more Jewish sense there. Number 6, to replace your cat litter, something I know a lot of us do. Number 5, I don't know where the rabbi came up with this one. We don't have basements in Tucson. So as opposed to that, I think you ought to use it as a bookmark in your Haggadah for next year. I know a lot of us do that. Number 4, matzah mulch for your spring roses. Number 3, glue matzahs together to form durable shipping containers. Number 2, and I know this is popular, my wife Karen does it often, exfoliate.
Yes, very good. Yeah, ooh, terrific.
Great. I got to go back and sit with their rabbi.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
And number 1, and I've got to take this to city council on Monday, but the rabbi's going to help us solve our budget problems. Fill potholes on all the city streets.
Yeah. I want to thank Mayor Jonathan Rothschild. Thank you.
Rothschild's aim is to serve our customers. Cordial service is Rothschild's aim. We work hard to deserve.
Okay, Walker, that's enough. Thank you. That's great. That was our top 10 uses for matzah after Passover is over. Well, my friends, on to Jewish. We love to showcase Jewish music of all kinds. This is our house rock band, Avanim, which was featured on our very first show 10 years ago, playing one of our all-time favorites, Pitachta, a psalm of celebration, a composition by my dad, Rabbi and cantor Baruch Kohan, who is here tonight as well. In addition to the people you have listed in your program, we also have Bryce Megdahl as soloist on Pitachta. With Eva Turner, I should add. Here we go. Pitachta saki vatas reini simcha. Oh, hey, pitachta, pitachta saki vatas reini simcha. Hey, pitachta saki saki. Hey, pitachta saki saki. Hey, pitachta saki saki vatas reini simcha. Vatas reini simcha. Vatas reini simcha.
Oh,
That was Avanim, who will be back with us in a little bit. You give him a big hand. As you can see, I'm just one of the singers with the band. One of the interesting trends in Judaism in recent years has been the integration of other spiritual and mystical tendencies. In fact, there's been a lot of interest among young and no longer young Jews in Buddhist practices in particular, and its potential interaction with Judaism. There are even entire groups of Jubus out there, maybe a couple in here tonight as well. Here to introduce a randomly recurring feature of Too Jewish is our own poet laureate, Dr. Wendy Weiss Kohan. She has a PhD in English, and her original haikus for you, a little enlightenment. We welcome Dr. Wendy Weiss Kohan. Shalom, Wendy.
Shalom.
So what inspired you to write these haikus?
Well, Rabbi, as you know, we recently took a trip to New York City, Jewish New York, and these were inspired by my maiden voyage to Katz's Deli, which was both a physical and a metaphysical awakening.
My. Pray, tell us more.
Well, as you know, a haiku has three lines, 5 syllables, followed by 7 syllables, followed by another 5 syllables. Is perfectly Jewish. 5, 7, 5, 18, hi!
That actually adds up to 17.
Oh, well, add the title line and you have 18, hi!
Okay, so that would be life in Hebrew. Well, here they are then, Wendy's three haikus for Jews, inspired by Katz's Deli on the Lower East Side.
Haiku 1, on pastrami. Now I've had a real pastrami. Later, real indigestion. Haiku 2, for Harry and Sally. The sign should read, "I'll have what she's having." Can a girl get that to go, too? Haiku 3, oh Reuben. Pastrami, cheese, rye, and sauerkraut? Oh, Reuben, how good treif can be.
Thank you, Wendy. That was truly enlightening. Haikus for Jews. For you, little enlightenment. We are delighted now to welcome a weekly visitor to Too Jewish who has been on the air literally since our very first show, my good friend Tom Price, a true expert on the international Jewish scene, here on his birthday as well. That song was a yom, yeah, you gotta sit forward. It's our trap. It makes the rabbi look taller. Tom, happy birthday. Welcome. Delighted to have you here.
Thank you, Rabbi. It's always a pleasure.
So, Tom, what do you want to talk about this week?
Well, this seems like a familiar question somehow.
Yeah, you know, every week, Tom and I get together, literally for 10 years, and I say, Tom, what do you want to talk about? And you say?
Anything but Israel.
And I say, Tom, why don't you want to talk about Israel? I mean, Israel, it's the international scene. It's important. I know Guy will talk about Israel, but why don't you want to talk about Israel?
I don't know enough about its complicated politics to comment in an informative and objective manner.
Tom, you spent like 400 years in the State Department. That can't be true.
That was a very State Department answer.
Yes, I suppose so. We cover every part of the Jewish world, and Russia, of course, is where so many people have come from a good part of the American Jewish community, descended from people who came from what's now the former Soviet Union, but comes from Russia. You know, somehow in Russia, they never liked Jews, even though Jews have been there for so long. Let's talk a little bit about anti-Semitism and its origins and sort of why it's so prevalent, like in the soil of Russia.
I think that's an excellent idea, and I would say that we should expand the focus a little to what used to be the Tsarist Empire, because today the Russian Federation only covers a small portion of that. There's also Ukraine and Belarus and all of that. And this part of tonight's program is, sorry folks, not going to be funny, but it's more or less tragic. The fact is that the largest population shift in Jewish history occurred following government-sponsored pogroms in the 1880s, which are in today's Ukraine, but were then Tsarist Russia, and probably somewhere between two-thirds and three-fourths of the Jews in the world moved from the Tsar's empire to other places, including the US and Canada, including eventually Israel, including Western Europe, mostly temporarily. And the anti-Semitism which fueled not only those pogroms, but also the government's reaction to them, has persisted in various forms to this very day. I mean, even though Jews in post-Soviet spaces, whether it's Ukraine or Belarus or the Baltic Republics or the Russian Federation, theoretically have more legal protections, I still know people who are brilliant people who graduate university at 19 and at age 20 when they're in law school conclude, there's no future for me here. The only place I can thrive as a person or prosper as an individual is outside of Mother Russia. And they leave their homeland. They go to a place where they don't speak the language, where they don't have as many career options, but where they don't have to deal with this incredibly inbred anti-Semitism that seems to come in sort of the air, the water, the soil of the former Tsarist Empire.
You know, it's funny, the fastest growing Jewish community in the world right now is Germany, which is ironic in so many ways. And most of them are Russian Jews who have now, or former Soviet Union Jews, who have now moved west because they just don't see a future in Russia.
Right. Well, many of my good friends have been involved in this process, either as running foundations or rabbinical schools in Germany, which are largely populated by Jews from the former Soviet Union. The Germans obviously have their own issues with their past treatment of the Jews, so they have a very liberal visa regime for Jews coming from the former Soviet Union. And, you know, people do whatever they can to make ends meet. So sometimes Jews in Germany who originally come from either Israel or the former Soviet Union do things we might not be proud of. I mean, they sometimes run, you know, questionable nightclubs or sex shops or whatever, but they do what they need to make a living and to put food on the table for their children.
And pork butcheries, of course, you got to remember those. Tom, last question on this. Is anti-Semitism just endemic? Is it ever going to leave Russia?
I think it's fair to say that in most parts of the world, people want somebody to blame for their problems. Whether it's the administration, the White House, the Republicans, the Democrats, the Jews, whatever it is, there's some group that you want to blame for everything that's wrong. And the default position for that in the former Tsarist Empire and all those countries that emerged from what used to be the lands of the Tsar, The default position is blame the Jews. When things go wrong, it's too dangerous to blame the government. It's too dangerous to blame ourselves. Blame the Jews. They're the eternal outsider. It's a safe target. It's a good, convenient explanation. So why not?
I want to thank you, Tom. We'll talk next week.
My pleasure.
And happy birthday. Tom Price, ladies and gentlemen. And now, a word from our sponsor, Casino del Sol.
I'd really like to go to a great Jewish graduate school like Brandeis or Yeshiva University, but I just don't have the funds.
It is very expensive to go to graduate school these days. How much money do you have?
I only have $500.
That's not going to cut it, but I've got a great idea. Why not go to Casino del Sol?
Casino del Sol? Arizona's premier casino? That beautiful resort with the excellent restaurants on Valencia? But how will that help?
Why, it's very simple, really. Just parlay that $500 into all the funds you need for graduate school and their delightful casino gaming experience.
What she means to say is that after a relaxing experience, staying in their lovely hotel rooms, eating award-winning food, and seeing fabulous live shows, you'll feel ready to ace your exams and get a huge scholarship to grad school.
What a great idea. I'll go to Casino del Sol right now. Yeshiva University, here I come.
I think you better go to Brandeis instead.
Casino del Sol, the place to go for fun and frolic if you want to succeed in Jewish life.
We'll hear from our skit actors again soon. Now we'd like to welcome our Mivina, our expert on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Letterman. Welcome, Amy, and Shavua Tov. Amy, the holiday of Passover is coming up in just a few weeks. Pesach, I think it's the 25th of March on a Monday night. It's the great ultimate festival of freedom. The notion of freedom is so central to Jewish belief, we get to make choices. But it's a little more complicated than that, freedom in Judaism.
Well, it is, and I'm glad you want to talk about Passover tonight, because I just want to say, before I start talking about freedom, that I read a very important finding in the Journal of American Medical Association today about Passover, and anyone who's going to a Seder, I want to make sure you know about this. If you're at a Seder, do not, I repeat, do not eat both the chopped liver and the cirrhosis, because it's been found that eating both together can lead to cirrhosis of the liver. So
you can put the, no, don't put the applause sign up for that one.
Isn't there like a ba-dump bump or something? So we're talking about Passover and we're talking about freedom. And, you know, in my 20s, freedom was the definition that Janis Joplin had, which was in Bobby McGee. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. But the Jews have a much more complicated definition of freedom. As a matter of fact, we actually have three Hebrew words for freedom. It's kind of like the idea of the Inuits and snow. We have so many feelings about freedom because it's so essential to being Jewish that we actually have three words. And these three words tell the story of Passover in a very short but concise way. The first word is chofesh. Chofesh in Hebrew is like a vacation, but it's really physical freedom. So the Jews or the Hebrews obtained their physical freedom from slavery in Egypt when they fled Egypt. And then they got the second type of freedom called dror. Dror is a bird. It's like a dove. It soars. And that freedom is intellectual freedom. So it's not a coincidence that the Jews were like, you know, muddling around for 40 years in the desert. It's not because they didn't have a GPS. It's because they didn't have the mindset yet to have the kind of intellectual and mental freedom in order to be able to do the next thing they needed to do, which was to have chirut, which was and is spiritual and inner freedom, the freedom to really accept and be who we are, and also the freedom to accept and embrace what we received in the desert, which was the Torah. So there's a connection between Passover and Shavuot, which has to do with freedom. We were freed physically to become freed mentally so that we could be free spiritually to really embrace the beautiful wisdom and tradition of Judaism. So when you're at your Seder this year and you're feeling really free, remember that it's kind of free to be all of these things together in our community and to embrace other people and help them celebrate their freedom as well.
Thanks, Amy. That's terrific. I love that concept of freedom to choose to embrace responsibility.
That's exactly right. And if it wasn't that I only had 3 minutes, I would have sang something from Janis Joplin, but I'll leave.
Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Thanks, Amy. Amy Hirschberg Letterman. Our house rock band Avanim is back, playing Shalom Rav Leoveh Toratecha, great peace to those who have those who love the Torah, composed by Rabbi Baruch Kohan, and kind of a cross between the Beatles and the Jews. So, Shalom Rav. Shalom. Thank you, guys. By the way, Avanim means stones in Hebrew. You know, kind of an inside joke. It is my pleasure and privilege now to introduce our congressman, Ron Barber. Congressman, it's a privilege to have you here. When you were first elected, replacing our good friend Gabby Giffords, who of course is Jewish, you can applaud, it's a good thing. If you recall, I made you an honorary Jew on Too Jewish after that.
I do remember that, Rabbi. It was a very memorable moment in my life.
Yes, I know. I know. The Federation is calling for a donation now. But as you noted, you were never quite sure what's going to happen to you on Too Jewish. But honorary or not, we are very grateful to have you here, Congressman. Serious subject. You were with Gabby when she was shot. When Christina Taylor Greene, Gabe Zimmerman, Judge John Roll, Dorwin Stoddard, Dot Morris, Phyllis Schneck were killed, and you yourself badly wounded. We had hopes that this would be the last terrible incident of its kind, but of course that hasn't been true. Can you tell us what the Congress has been doing, what your involvement has been in trying to end this kind of tragedy? We know there have been horrible shootings in Aurora, Colorado, and perhaps worst of all in Newtown, Connecticut, and elsewhere. Since then, what's Congress doing?
Well, Rabbi, you're right. We had an opportunity after the Tucson tragedy to do something. This community responded in the most compassionate and comforting way. It helped all of us heal. It helped the community heal. But then we kind of just forgot about it, not here, but nationally. And then, of course, we had the series of tragedies, the most significant of which was the slaughter of 20 children in Sandy Hook School in Newtown. To me, that was a tipping point, and I really think that what we've seen across the country is a dramatic shift in public opinion, which I think has begun to wake up a Congress that's been sleeping on this issue too long. As you know, of course, I've put together two groups here in Tucson to help advise me on what the best course of action will be. I have a mental health task force focused on prevention of violence. And secondly, I've had meetings with law enforcement officials to get their view. I'm also the vice chair of a congressional work group or task force on gun violence prevention. So there's a lot of movement here and nationally and in Congress. And what I'm focused on are four things. We have to do a better job of helping people with mental illness to get early identification and treatment. Now, having said that, I'm always quick to say very, very immediately afterwards that 95% or more of people with mental illness never commit a violent act. They're more likely to be victims. But people who are untreated and undiagnosed can, in fact, be dangerous to themselves or others. So that's number one. Number two, we have to have universal background checks. We cannot enforce current laws without that. And I really commend the mayor and the city council for taking steps here. Thirdly, we have to identify the buyers who are straw buyers of guns and gun trafficking. And fourthly, and this one goes right back to the Tucson shooting specifically, we have to reduce the size of high-capacity magazines which give firepower to weapons. Now, why that's important is I take it from my own experience. When the shooting occurred in Tucson, there were 33 bullets discharged in 19.6 seconds. And in 19.6 seconds, 19 people were wounded and 6 died. If we can reduce the firepower and get treatment to people who might be dangerous, we can go a long way to solving this unfortunate tragedy that we've had way too many times.
I want to thank Congressman Ron Barber. I don't have anything to add. That is fantastic. Ron, thank good luck much, with Rabbi. All of it. America, by the way, you just heard a little of God Bless America, and you should know that was written by Irving Berlin, a Jewish composer who also wrote White Christmas and Easter Parade, however. Can't win them all. My friends, I just want to mention another one of our gold sponsors, Jill Rich, who is a fantastic realtor. If you know Jill, you know she's one of the great people in Southern Arizona and also a fantastic realtor. And if you need a house, it's like having your bubby in the real estate business. So you can find her ad in your booklet, 349-0174. By the way, do you know the joke about the rabbi, the priest, and the minister? No, they don't walk into a bar, thank you. Instead, the synagogue, the cathedral, and the church are all on the same block, and they're all very proud of their clergy. And the congregations are more than a little bit competitive. So when the diocese buys the priest a new Cadillac, the church goes to the minister and gets him a new Lexus. And not to be outdone, the church goes to the Jim Click automotive team and buys the rabbi a brand new Lincoln. One morning, the three clergymen are all leaving at the same time. The rabbi and the minister notice the priest is out front with some incense and holy water and a group from the parish, and they are blessing the new Cadillac. So the minister sees this. He gathers the vestry of the church, and they pour a giant bucket of water over the Lexus to christen it. The rabbi looks perplexed for a moment, and then he goes into the temple, comes out with a hacksaw, and cuts 3 inches off the tailpipe of the Lincoln.
Rabbi, I have to ask you a question. Is there such a thing as a Jewish car?
Why, I'm so glad you asked, Scott. There are a number of models of cars that could be considered Jewish. Mazdas, Kias, Fords, Lincolns, Jeeps, Chryslers.
But just what is the criteria for determining if a car is actually appropriately Jewish? And how do you know that it's kosher?
Well, if the car comes from a Jim Click automotive team dealership, then it's definitely kosher and has to be considered Jewish.
Do you know if any rabbis have gotten cars from Jim Click dealerships?
You know, I believe Rabbi Cohen has a Jim Click car.
That's right, Marjorie. And I can testify that Jim Click cars are definitely both Jewish, and given the proper treatment at Jim Click automotive team service centers, they remain kosher for many years to come. Our skit team. It's time now for a word of Torah, a weekly helping of just what the central text in Jewish tradition, the five books of Moses. This might be a little hot right now. Thank you. Just what the central text of Jewish tradition, the five books of Moses, means in our lives today. And while normally we look forward to the week to come, tonight we're going to highlight a passage from this morning's Torah portion of Ki Tisa. When we begin Ki Tisa, Moses is still on top of Mount Sinai, receiving the Ten Commandments, written in stone by God's own hand, Be'etzba Elohim, literally the finger of God, it says. 40 days have passed since the revelation at Sinai, the public receiving of those commandments by the whole people. But down below, trouble is brewing. The problem seems to be that the people of Israel need something more tangible to connect them to their disembodied God. Worried about the absence of their leader, the Israelites compel his brother Aaron to make them a physical manifestation of a God, a calf of molten gold, which they worship, and then begin to party in a way that makes Purim seem tame. When Moses descends the mountain and sees what's going on, he's furious. He smashes the God-written tablets of stone, grinds up the golden calf, forces the people to drink it in water, and then suppresses an insurrection militarily. God exacts further punishment from the Israelites, who have just broken the second commandment in a wild and public way, and then withdraws the divine presence from the midst of the rebellious people. After all this trauma, Moses looks for reassurance. He asks God to go before the people as they continue their journey towards the promised land, and God agrees. And then Moses asks God, Hareini na et kvodecha, show me your glory, please. In other words, let me see you. I too need something more tangible for my own spiritual fulfillment. God's response is elegant and complex. I will make my goodness pass before you. I will proclaim before you the name of the Lord and the grace and compassion I show, but you cannot see my face. No one may see me and live. Moses is told to stand on a rock, and God will place him in a cleft in the rock and shield him with God's own hand from the radiant, maybe radioactive, presence of God. Then God will remove the hand and show Moses only what God leaves behind. Moses can't really see God at all. What Moses will experience is what God leaves, what some have called God traces in the world. You know, it's not what we actually see that is truly spiritual, but what we can sense. Jewish spirituality comes from understanding God's qualities, not from seeing, touching, or tasting God. The result of God's presence, that which God leaves behind, is how we come to know God. It is divine purpose we seek, meaning and morality defined by the very nature of the experience of God. Our covenant. All Jewish spirituality is rooted in seeking to discover not God's face, but God's purpose. May we each find that purpose and carry it into the week to come. We are delighted to welcome a very special guest, Rabbi Billy Lefkowitz of Tucson Hebrew Academy. Billy, I'm so delighted you're here tonight. You've been listening to the show for a while. Tell us about your first reaction to it.
Well, Rabbi, I have to be honest with you. This is like my dream come true, and I don't know if the audience understands this. But 10 years ago, my daughter was 2 years old, and your radio station came on, and I thought, where's he going to go with this in Tucson? You know, he speaks very well. He has a very good voice. He is quite good looking. How far is this radio show going to go on to Tucson? So I was one of your very cynical listeners, and I switched it on. Tom Price was amazing, I have to tell you. Amy came on later on, and I landed up thinking, this is amazing. This is an awesome show, and I have to congratulate you guys. This is he's done very, very well, exceptionally, I have to tell you. The interviews that you have, who's going to interview in this town? And I was waiting for the phone call, but it didn't come. But you had better.
Sorry.
No, it's not true. I don't blame you for that. But you had excellent, excellent guests on your show. And I was inspired. And I found myself every Sunday getting to the car. That was my excuse, and switching it on. And I have to tell you something. You once made me late for an appointment. Now, that's not such a big deal here, but let me tell you something with regards to myself.
Billy, you've never been late anywhere, I don't think.
But I once switched you on, and I missed the turn off. I landed up on the highway, and next minute when I finished listening, I was on my way to El Paso, all right? So this is a true story. How great is your show? How great is your show? So thank you.
You know, we were talking not too long ago about, you have a wonderful midrash that has to do, I think, with one of the real ideas we have in Too Jewish, which is to cover everything Jewish. Reform, conservative, orthodox, reconstructionist, renewal, secular, everybody. It had to do with a ruby.
That's right. Rabbi, as I said, your show, I didn't say this yet, but your show is inclusive of everybody. That's what's your brilliant part, mindset of it. And there's a story once that speaks about, it goes back to the golden era of Spain, where the king turned around, and that's time the Muslims, the Christians, the Jews all shared the same table in the governing concepts of the country. It's a beautiful time that was called the golden era of Spain. And he said, which one of the three of you have the truth, have the real thing? And the rabbi found himself on the spot. How could he answer this back without insulting the minister, the Muslim, or the king? What can he do? So he told the story of the ruby. Once upon a time, there's his father who was a jeweler who had this perfect ruby that he cut and he polished. And apparently, when he held it to his heart, he was filled with so much understanding and tremendous amount of kindness. And people admired this ruby, and particularly his three sons. But one day, the jeweler had to go away, had to leave. And he didn't know who to give this ruby to. So all his sons thought of it. The older one, I needed the middle one. I'm all careful. The younger one, you never give me any responsibility. So he didn't know what to do. So he took this ruby and he went up to his workshop and he cut 3 rubies exactly like the one that he had. He polished it, cut it, and each one looked the same. And he called each son privately. He gave it to the older, the middle one at a separate moment, the younger one as well. And he left. And each son thought they had the real ruby. And as time went on, the sons discovered that each son has a ruby just like their father and just like they all had. And how can we all have 3 rubies? Which one did our father give it to us? And the older one said, it's mine. The middle one said, no way. The younger one said, this has to be. He gave it to me. And they went along and gave it to the judge. And the judge looked at the older son's ruby, the middle son's ruby, the younger son's ruby, and he looked at them all and he found that they all were identical. And then he came up with an answer. He says, whoever takes this ruby, brings it up to their heart, and lives their life with true understanding and true kindness has the real thing. And that's ultimately the answer with regards to all religions in the world. If you're pursuing your life with true understanding and true kindness, you really, truly have the real thing. And I find you've accomplished that in your radio show, Robert Cohen. You have a ruby in your hand, all right? Here it is, all right? You're tremendous. I have a lot of love and respect for you.
Thank you. So Rabbi Billy Lefkowitz.
Thank you.
Who is going to be honored tomorrow night by Congregation Beth Shalom. So go to that, too. It's really a fantastic, he's a great guy and a fantastic story. It is my pleasure to introduce an outstanding local Tucson band, Boreas, which has a new CD out, a brand new Friday night Shabbat service. And the cut is called Shiru Ladonai. So please give Boreas a big hand. In the interest of full disclosure, I actually commissioned Sam Golden, one of the leaders of Boreas, to write some Hebrew songs. And the next thing we knew, we had a whole Friday night service. So I think you really enjoy these guys. They're wonderful. That was Boreas, Shiru Ladonai. They'll be back. You know, we have now run well over 500 old Jewish jokes of the week, jokes your Bubby and Zadie knew, and tonight we bring you a true classic.
A Jewish man is waiting in line to be knighted by the Queen of England. He's supposed to kneel and recite a sentence in Latin. His turn comes, he kneels, the queen taps him on the shoulders with the sword, and in the panic of all the excitement, he forgets his Latin. Thinking quickly, he recites the only other line he knows in a foreign language, which he remembers from the Passover Seder. Manish tana halayla hazeh mikol halelot. The puzzled queen turns to her advisor and asks, why is this night different from all other nights? That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature to Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. The nation of Israel is the homeland of the heart for Jews. We are privileged to hear from our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Every week, he's brought a special... Don't tell me it happened again. Okay. From Israel, Roni Kedar, who grew up in England, moved to the Sinai when Israel had it, moved to Egypt for a while, and now lives in Gaza, where a community gets hit regularly by missiles from Hamas. Roni Kedar and Guy Gelbert of the Weintraub Israel Center. Roni, it's great to have you. Welcome from Israel. You come to us directly from sort of Gaza adjacent, is what we would call it in Southern California. You've had such an interesting set of travels from England to the Sinai that was given back to Egypt. Then you lived in Egypt for a while with your husband who's from Egypt. Then you came back and decided to settle just outside of Gaza. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, when we left the Sinai, in accordance with the peace treaty with Egypt, we wanted to choose a place for us to live. And we wanted to be as near as we could to our original village without being on negotiable land again. And this we were quite adamant about. So we chose where we are today, right on the border of the Gaza Strip, in fact, the closest village to the Gaza Strip. And unfortunately, we've suffered years of rockets and missiles, and some of our people have been, some of our homes have been damaged, people have been killed. But every now and then, every time it happens, Israel retaliates, we fire back. Every time, the whole issue gets worse and worse. And we decided that the best way to, some of us in the village thought that the best way to try and change this type of life would be to give the people on the other side of the border life as well. And we realized that violence is not going to be the answer. And we're still looking for people to talk to. I found them. I found them in Gaza, and I try to find more and more opportunities to speak to these people. I do it either by cell phone or over the internet. And another way I've found is by helping sick people who get permits to come across to Israel, and I take them and meet them at the border and take them to hospital. Part of the humanitarian act of helping the sick, a wonderful opportunity to talk. And we talk and listen to one another without being judgmental, just trying to understand which each one of us is coming from.
Roni, you work with a group that builds these kinds of ties, brings people over from Gaza right now, you know, when rockets are still flying. Some people would call you, I mean, I'll play devil's advocate, you know, you guys are dreamers, you know, you're, as they call Joseph, a Baal Chalamot. This is ridiculous. This is just a wild dream that anything positive can come.
That is what I get day in and day out. But to tell you the truth, I don't think I'm a dreamer. I think those people in Gaza who think that they can demolish Israel and throw Israel into the sea, they're dreaming. We're there to stay. And the people in Israel... And the people in Israel who think that they can bomb Gaza again and again will bring to a peace treaty, they're dreaming. I think I am not a dreamer.
I want to thank Roni Kedar. Thank you. Guy, you've been on the show now for 3 years. You've spent 3 years here in America. Coming from Haifa, you've had an extraordinary experience. Can you give us some observations before you go back? You're returning to Israel soon. We'll have a new shliach here in southern Arizona. Tell us a little bit about your observations.
Well, Rabbi, when I'm thinking of going back, I'm thinking of what will I take back with me? What would I want to bring to Israel from the Tucson Jewish community? And I saw earlier you and Rabbi Billy, for example, hugging each other. I want to take that. I want to take that hug of a Reform rabbi and an ultra-Orthodox rabbi hugging each other, talking to each other, being together. I want to take this sense of a united Jewish community, although not unified. I want to take this, for example, Ronnie's visit. Ronnie's visit to Tucson has become possible thanks to the generosity of a program sponsored by the Jewish Federation of Southern Arizona, Partnership Together. This program is being sponsored by the Jewish Federation and by the Weintraub Israel Center. And we have on the steering committee of this program, we have Orthodox Jews, Reform Jews, secular Jews, people that their only Jewish connection might be that they want to be on this program of Partnership Together. That's what I want to take back with me to Israel, this Jewish pluralism, this community, this sense of community, and above all, the understanding that we shouldn't take our Jewish identity for granted, and the fact that we can be together, this togetherness, we shouldn't take it for granted.
I want to thank Guy Gelbart, Ronnie Kedar.
Hey, Scott, there's no smoking in here. What are you doing?
I was going to smoke this, of course.
Smoking is bad for everyone, and secondhand smoke causes terrible health problems for the whole audience. No one wants to breathe in your smoke.
And with Freedom Smoke USA, they don't have to. There's no smoke at all.
Do you mean the suppliers of the world's finest e-juices, custom blended in their facilities by their uniquely trained staff?
They also stock a wide variety of hardware for everyone, from beginners to devoted enthusiasts.
Gee, thanks. I can't believe I was going to light up and poison the air for everyone in here, when I could have just gone to Freedom Smoke USA and allowed everyone here to breathe.
That's Freedom Smoke USA, in stores and online.
Our skit team, Scott Arden, Marjorie Hochberg, Bryce Megdahl, and sometimes Rabbi Jason Holtz. We welcome back Boreas with the world premiere of their new song, Dodi Li, not performed before, I Am My Beloved's and My Beloved Is Mine, from their new CD. Available everywhere soon. By the way, I think they're all single. No, they're not all single. Bob's married. Never mind. Just being Jewish, you know, you got. Some of them are. Never mind.
One, two, one, two, three, four. Do-di-li,
Thank you.
Darius. Let's give him a big hand. We are delighted to welcome our star tonight, the outstanding comedian Robert Klein. For more than 40 years, Robert Klein, you can applaud. Just keep this sign going, boys. That's great. For more than 40 years, Robert Klein has entertained audiences in comedy, on Broadway, and television, and on film. Born in the Bronx, he was a member of the famed Second City Theatrical Troupe in Chicago, nominated twice for Grammy Awards for the Best Comedy Album of the Year for his albums Child of the 50s, one of the great comedy albums in all history, and Mind Over Matter. He received a Tony Award nomination for Best Actor, won an LA Drama Critics Circle Award for his performance in the Neil Simon musical They're Playing Our Song, and an Obie and an Outer Critics Circle Award for Outstanding Performance by an Actor in the Sisters Rosenzweig, Wendy Wasserstein's play. In 1975, Robert Klein was the very first comedian to appear in a live concert on home box office. He's gone on to do 9 one-man shows for HBO. He is fantastic. Please welcome Robert Klein.
Little Broadway. There's something I get more often than any younger man. A colonoscopy, a colonoscopy. It stirs such feelings so deep inside of me. When I turn 53, a colonoscopy inside of me, some Valium in a very large sum, and some Vaseline. I don't have lots of courage, I know myself, no doubt, but my gastroenterologist knows me inside out. A colonoscopy, a colonoscopy. So wonderful to see myself internally, and for a modest fee, a colonoscopy opened up a whole new world. It's an apprehensive moment when the doctor asks you to bend. It's a long, long tunnel, but I see the light at the end. Everybody, a colonoscopy, a colonoscopy. I find I'm dreaming of someone with rubber gloves, not a sigmoidoscopy, 'cause a sigmoidoscopy is just a semicolonoscopy. And I saw the whole thing on TV. It was spectacular. And it opened up a whole new world. Opened up a whole new colonoscopy song, Bob Stein. We were nominated for a Primetime Emmy for that song in 2001, right? We didn't win. Anti-Semitism. They said, no way, Jew boy, we're not electing you. You notice that was a love song? You don't happen to be a gastroenterologist, are you? Oh, because he was shaking his head like he performs these things all the time. Because it's a life-saving procedure, isn't it? Unbelievable. To me, it's more futuristic. It's more, who's the science fiction writer? Jules Verne. I mean, if some futurist had told me in 1965, yes, in 2020, 21st century, they'll be putting a television camera right up your tuchus into your body to see if you're sick. Do you remember what a television camera looked like in 1965? Ouch! But it's true. It's a television camera in the body, a little technicality for me because I'm a Screen Actors Guild member. Hair and makeup had to go up there too, which was very uncomfortable, I can tell you. I wanted to be a doctor when I went to college. A few things got in my way. Calculus, physics, organic chemistry, inorganic chemistry. I joined ARP. I mean, let's face it, I'm getting along and long in the tooth. And I'm not going to prepay for any burials, but one thing I like about Jewish culture, we bury immediately. I mean, a Jew dies, zoom, into the ground. What the hell happened to Irving? He was here a second ago. Jewish, we had to bury him immediately, I'm sorry. You know? A Jew dies at noon, call the relatives in Milwaukee. The funerals are two, you know. I mean, I don't know, there must be good reasons for it. A wake is so painful. I've been to so many Gentile wakes. And you know, 8 showings a day, 5 days, like vaudeville. I mean, it's difficult on the family. A Jew dies, zoom, that's it, you know. I mean, there are reasons. I don't know if they're Talmudic. What happened to the rabbi? He left here. Oh. But there are many reasons for it. Let's go on with life. Let's remember you as you were. You're not as interesting as you used to be. I mean, you know, I'll tell you the truth. The older I get around my relatives, I'm afraid to take a nap, lest I be mistaken for dead. Pop, we gotta go home. The kids have school. Pop, 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 he's dead. I'm up, I'm up, I'm up. I got rhythm, I got music. Don't you bury me again. The rabbi almost had a heart attack last time my hand came through the dirt like that. My ancestors actually came over on the Mayflower. They had the buckled shoe concession on board. Pilgrims went crazy for that line. And Hungarian, 1903. Oh, thank God for that. The grandparents came over. I had made a speech before the Hungarian American Society on behalf of my friend, a producer named Robert Helmy, at Princeton. I said, what a thrill it is, an honor to be talking before an organization, the Hungarian American Society, representing a country from which my grandparents fled in terror in 1903. Thank you so much. Franz Josef this, okay? You ever order a kosher meal? I did it as punishment to American Airlines to throw them into chaos. I was never so embarrassed. Will the Jew who ordered the kosher meal please ring his hostess call button? Repeat, will the Jew who ordered the kosher meal, Mr. Abramachingvitzenberger, Mr. Bergvitzen, are you the Jew? We'll take your coat in a moment. Jew, are you the Jew, sir? May I see your genitalia, please? We have the Jew. Two more. And this hospitality doesn't end. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Captain Duncan up on the flight deck. We're about 70 miles from Atlanta, where the temperature is 82 degrees, humidity 65%. Incidentally, sure hope the Jew enjoyed the kosher meal back there as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. I understand it was kosher vanushkas, which is the grain and pasta. It says here that sustain the Jews during the programs. The misspelling here, it says programs, you know. My purser here and the first officer had the kishki, which is Jewish health food, I'm told. Let's see what's in it. That's flour and fat stuffed into the intestinal tract of a cow. God bless you people. No wonder you've survived over 3,000 years. The purser had the cholent. Did you ever see cholent? It's a mid-European stew with floating prunes in beef fat. It's looks like the Gowanus Canal in Brooklyn after a cruise ship leaves the harbor. I don't know much about kosher and all that. I know that I did a movie once with Mary Tyler Moore, and we were talking during the lighting change, and she told me how much she loves animals, and I told her how much I love lobster. She said, Robert, don't eat lobster. And I said, Mary Tyler Moore is observant. As you know, it has to have scales on it to be kosher, but Jews love lobster, so Israeli scientists have come up with a way to kosherize lobster. They use the NASA technique with the heat tiles. They individually put the scales on the lobster. I'd like to announce it will be kosher lobster in 2016. It'll be $5,300 a pound. I say, are you observant? Oh no, don't eat lobster. She said, they mate for life. I mean, you ever hear of too much information? I mean, you know, I'm not interested in the marital situation of a lobster. And I'm sure there's occasionally been a lobster divorce. Get your filthy claws off me! I smell that slut flounder all over you. But it's not kosher. Now, kosher, I know the meat must be killed a certain way. A number of years ago, I was playing the Concord Hotel when it was still in existence, the top of the Borscht Belt, and kosher, strictly kosher. And this family, wealthy family, came for the week, and I heard they brought their own mishgiach. Now, I inaccurately thought that a mishgiach meant Messiah. And I said, these are wealthy people. They go on vacation, bring their own Messiah. Then I was explained to me, no, a supervisor of the kitchen where kosher is not kosher enough. Glatt kosher, I'd never heard that expression until then, which is kosher to the third power. Kosher times kosher kabosha. And as I understand it, in kosher, the meat must be killed a certain way. And in glatt kosher, the animal must be killed a certain way, and the person that kills the animal must be killed a certain way. It's a very esoteric part of the Jewish. Is there a rabbi behind me? Does he sneak up? And Washington's birthday just happened. I became a history political science major, and George Washington, I dislike the way they trivialize him and made him mythical. Do you know that George Washington risked he would have been hung by the British had we lost? He was the richest man of Virginia. He freed his slaves upon his death. He did not free them earlier because he needed them to work on the farm, earn money. But he wasn't a genius like Jefferson. He also didn't shtup his slaves, but nobody's perfect. But Washington was, you know, he was the important, he is the father of our country. He was the important cog in the founding fathers. We wouldn't have had a union without him. It's amazing. And we purport to be a patriotic people. We just had, and I'm sure that George Washington would be proud to know that we celebrate his birthday every year with a mattress sale. And, these tawdry used car dealers. I'm Bill Duncan from Bill Duncan Dodge. I got a George Washington birthday sale and knock your socks off, right, George? And you got this schmageggy actor getting $90 with a rubber hatchet. That's right, Bill. I'm chopping down the prices on these beauties. It's a veritable cherry tree of savings. And I wouldn't lie to you. I'm the father of discounts, you know.
I went to a small school in Western New York, undergraduate, called Alfred University. It's good for no claps in Tucson. It's good for three claps at Alfred University. The most primitive part of New York State, Allegheny County, 300 miles from New York City, 1958. I'm a kid from the Bronx, provincial. I get off the train and I see, I said, oh my God, look at those Dalmatians. I've never seen cows that big. Why are they barking that way? Are they in pain? Oh my God, look at that tumor hanging from it. I encountered a little anti-Semitism, I have to admit. Nothing you could put your finger on. Hey, Jew boy! Where are you going? Yom Kippur services? You know, I don't know. But I did get my revenge. Ultimately, two important facets of my college career came together in a confluence, theater and anti-Semitism. When I played Shylock in The Merchant of Venice before an entirely anti-Semite audience. So in that touching third act, I don't know what Shakespeare knew about Jews, but he certainly knew human beings. And when Shylock asks, hath not a Jew eyes? Hath not a Jew hands, organs, senses, dimensions, affections, passions? And the audience went, no, Jew, boy, Jew! And they start to chase me around with a German shepherd. And I went to the ethics professor. Let me in! It was only a fantasy. It's all in my memoir, what? Okay. Robert Klein, the amorous busboy of Decatur Avenue. This copy is going to the rabbi. And it ends when I'm 25 years old. Seriously, that's the book. And all my HBO specials are in these two things. You can. I know you're all gonna run out and to Amazon.com. And, oh, hold on 1 second. Mouth harp. Okay. Boy, that ARP magazine is fabulous. I mean, the discounts, the early bird special with an ARP card. I can get the best steak in Fort Lauderdale for $6.99 if I'm willing to eat it at 8:30 in the morning. I'll tell you, I have a beef with South Florida. My parents retired. I sent two healthy, vibrant, 65-year-old retired parents to South Florida. 30 years later, they were dead. What's going on down there? I put the ARP magazine next to the toilet with the Hamaka Schlemmer, the L.L. Bean, and the North Face catalog, because I'm an outdoorsman. That's my thing, you know. I don't know about you. When I move my bowels, I like to price kayaks. What can I tell you? It relaxes me. Well, I'll never be a doctor, but one time I put the harmonica in my mouth, I just breathed, and it gave me an idea. I thought to myself, this would make a hell of a nurse's aide. Guy is sick in the hospital, a nurse can put one of these in his mouth with a Bob Dylan neck holder. Hear how he's breathing, go away, play cards. Any problems? She hears right away, music. Dr. Klein, code blue, Dr. Moe, Dr. Larry, Dr. Kirk. If you die with the thing, it ends on an exhale, perfectly fitting for the end of a life, yeah? I can't stop my legs. thank you for stopping my leg. Whoa, it feels so good just sitting on the ground with my other leg. Oh, like a good leg ought to be. There it goes again. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Rabbi, where are you?
Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Klein.
Oh, my God, this is low.
Yeah, it's trying to get you ready
for something. I thought everyone was short who was sitting here. It turns out that, well, Johnny, you know, his desk was higher, too.
Yeah, you know, because he wanted to look taller.
Except he used to have, one time I grabbed my coffee cup with water in it. It was pure vodka. Johnny's. I went, and he used to have a Paul Mall burning over here, which the rabbi doesn't have.
No. That Freedom Smoke, USA.
Yeah.
Robert, I'm sorry, your routine was too Jewish. I just...
Well, I decided, you know, I have all kinds of material. We're very proud people, you know, and we're perfect Jews. I just found out Bernie Madoff, not Jewish. Thank God.
No, he...
Berkowitz, son of Sam Killer, not Jewish.
Episcopalian.
Jack Abramoff, Lutheran. Thank goodness for that.
Thank God.
You know, Sully Sullenberger landed that plane in the Hudson? Jewish.
Yeah.
I know the family in Boston, the herring merchants, Shmuel and Itzhak Sullenberger. They're so observant, they won't let their kids watch Porky Pig.
I think we're all relieved to learn that because, you know, we were worried about some of those Milken, you know, some of those guys were, you didn't go to school with them.
There was I'm paraphrasing badly, but in Israel, somebody told me that some wise men said, we will become a true state when we have our own prostitutes and thieves and so forth. Wap, wap, wah, you know. People are people, but...
You can't win them all. Robert, you have performed in every medium all over the world, and you've been a big star for a long time, and now you get to play Tucson, Arizona. This is the highlight of your career, of course. I want you to know.
I didn't meet the mayor, but I met Congressman Barber.
That's right.
Terrific guy, and, you know, I think that we have a shot with Gabby Giffords and Captain Kelly and with Bloomberg's money and people getting it on the table again to try to do something about those things. I personally have a BB gun, which I have a portrait of Hitler, and I aim at it, you know.
Where do you aim in the...
My backyard.
Oh, I see.
I don't like guns myself. I if someone wants a long gun to go hunting and all that, I don't have any problem. But, you know, there's just too many guns. Anyway, we know that.
So you're also a big airplane enthusiast. And you... See, now we know this is... You went out to the Pima Air and Space Museum today?
I sure did, thanks to Mark Marchand, the curator. He gave Bob and I a tour. It's just magnificent. I had seen the Boneyard a few years ago when I was here. A colonel, the CO, had given me a tour. I love airplanes. I'm much too smart to be a pilot. In other words, I know that I wouldn't be a good one, so stick to driving, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was a magnificent trip, and if you haven't seen it, it's just to see these things, both civilian planes and warplanes, which, you know, it's one thing to see a documentary about World War II, to touch these things and to think of all the brains and ingenuity that went into destruction, but some good things come out of it, like civilian airliners, radar, TV, phones, but it took a war to do it.
Yeah, two Jewish came out of a war, too. I just wanted you to know that.
Did it?
No, not really. I just said that, but...
You're pretty good.
Nah.
You're a real slick radio guy.
With a face like this, you know, you have to, really. Yeah,
come choices on, you're pretty cute.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate that. I think one of my favorite routines of yours goes back a long way to the child of the 50s. You talk about what it was like growing up Jewish and American, and you have a routine about the flag, the American flag.
and the way that, you know, people grew up. But you really are very much a part of what it means to be both Jewish and American, and it's been kind of a tension within your work, I think.
Yes, of course, you know, Jewish comedian is like Greek restaurateur, or, I mean, we are overrepresented in comedy and psychiatry and very much underrepresented in the priesthood.
Also the NBA, I might add.
It was a very Jewish game.
Yes, a long time.
The early NBA was replete with Jews, and college basketball as well. But I've talked about the Jewish being, you know, the Jewish experience and my own, I talk about it in my book, and I've talked about it for years on television, and proudly, but with a sense of humor, the way Richard Pryor talked about being black. And I think that anti-Semitism will never be erased in the world, but in America, I think you were talking about that earlier, I really think that it's the best possible. I mean, we become part of the universe here in such a strong way, and have contributed. I get this depressing newsletter from the World Jewish Congress about, you know, everything is somebody threw over headstones in Belgium. They'll never learn, these people, and I don't know if there's much you can do about it. But on that basis, while I don't agree with everything in Israeli politics, people forget their history. They forget 67. I remember Walter Cronkite, not neutral at all, delivering the evening news with joy when the Israelis won the war in 67, and Americans cheered it. And, you know, that honeymoon is over, but it's such a vibrant place and such a vibrant democracy. I've only been there once, and I really have to go back again.
We're taking a temple trip next year. You're welcome to come with us.
I went on a yachad. It was a mission called yachad.
Yachad, right.
Yachad. What does that mean again?
It means together, all in one.
Yes, well, we were certainly together, and I did two shows, one in Jerusalem, and kibbutzing the whole time, and it was during the Lebanon War. I had done this narration for the UJA, you know, pro bono, and they sent me to Israel, and I was, when I left there, I was so confident that it'll always be there, you know, that Arts and Leisure magazine, the American Express magazine, some weeks before, months before, it asked me to write about my favorite city for the back cover. And I said, London, you know. When I came back, I said, Jerusalem. And they said, oh, it's too controversial.
Too Jewish.
Too Jewish. Too controversial. And too Jewish, you know. And I convinced them it wasn't. But yeah, I knew then, you know, no more Sinatra going every week and America just in love with it. Americans are still in love with it, but It's part of the world now and has a lot of challenges, of course.
I want to thank Robert Klein for a great visit.
Thank you.
Here on Too Jewish, comedian Robert Klein.
Thank you. The funny thing is, I'm not Jewish, but thanks for being so nice.
But he looks Jewish, really.
Hey guys, where are y'all going after the show? We're practically done.
We're going to the Hub, of course, for the best ice cream in Tucson, Arizona, and maybe the world.
Why don't you join us? They also have great adult beverages and terrific food.
And they're open really late. It's kind of like a great, cool bar with fantastic ice cream.
That's 266 East Congress, and they're open till 2 a.m. tonight.
Wow, I could eat a lot of ice cream by then.
Join us at the Hub.
Our skit team, Scott Arden, Marjorie Hochberg, Bryce Megdahl, and Rabbi Jason Holtz. Especially want to thank Walker Ford, our sound expert, the producer of the Too Jewish radio show for 10 years. Night Possible, our producer, Charlie Levy, Rich Moret, Nancy Levy, Kim Van Amberg, Vicky Otto, Scott Arden, Julie Dawson, Carol Seck, Dick Belkin, Jill Rich, and Dr. Jason Feld, our fantastic sound man and radio producer again, Walker Ford. video displays by Wendy Weiss-Cohan, run by Boaz Cohan, the great staff of Temple Emmanuel, and our wonderful partners at Tucson Hebrew Academy and Jewish Family and Children's Services. We're happy to take more donations if you want to give them to us. And so many others, special thanks to our title sponsor, Jim Click Automotive Team, Casino del Sol, Freedom Smoke USA, The Hub. They pay those people to do that, by the way. And the wonderful realtor, Jill Rich. And, of course, our home on the radio, KVOI, broadcasting this show again tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock when you get up with a completely different show. Also, if you can, there are two more events to attend tomorrow. Rabbi Billy, our good friend, is being honored by Congregation Beth Shalom. And at 2 p.m., Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Cohan, you heard a lot of his music tonight, is doing a presentation for the Arizona, I can almost get this open, for the Tucson Jewish History Museum at Temple Emmanuel at 2 p.m. And now, finally, to play us out, we are thrilled to welcome the outstanding men's choral group, the Sons of Orpheus, under the direction of Grayson Hurst, who are performing the classic theme from Exodus in Hebrew. Our final play out of Too Jewish tonight, Sons of Orpheus. Grayson, take it away. The Sons of Orpheus. Guys, take a bow. Thank you. My friends, thank you. Drive safe and listen to Too Jewish.
Good night.